The history of man has been maybe 8 or 10,000 years. Of course, in the billion years that this earth was first created from the sun, maybe several billion years. And we feel that we have evolved, we have progressed. Man has improved from what he was 8, 10,000 years ago. And as far as technology we have, yes, we are able to air condition our house. We are able to get on the internet and talk to somebody across the world. We are able to fly to the moon, and maybe eventually Mars will have colonies there. But have we made progress in talking to our neighbor, the person next to us, maybe a person in our family or in our neighborhood or in our community? We think we have progressed because of material progress. We have better cars and better planes and internet and news and all that. But have we really progressed? And we find that the evolution of man has been lopsided. What do we mean by lopsided? Okay, so this chart is called the BMI chart. And I have three equipments or three parts of my personality. With the body, I perceive the objects. So I see, hear, smell, taste, touch. With the mind, I feel emotions like joy, sorrow, anger, hatred. And with the intellect, I think the thoughts, concepts. So intellect is the faculty which decides what is right, what is wrong. And V represents vasanas, or our tendencies, which we have accumulated not only in this lifetime, but what we believe in numerous lifetimes. That's why people are born with certain tendencies. Some are musical, some are good in sports, some are good in science, children. So vasanas are our good and bad tendencies that we are born with. And Om on top represents God, God's presence, because God is in every one of us. You can call it Om, you can call him Jesus, Father in heaven, Allah, Buddha, Krishna, Guru, Nanak, whatever. But it is God's presence in us. So that is the essence of this chart, and we will be using it from time to time. So our growth in this world has been very lopsided. We have spent a lot of time in improving objects for the body. So for the body, I have more comforts, I have more, I can travel, I can do a lot more, I can accomplish a lot more. But what we have neglected is the inner growth of the mind and the intellect. At the body level, yes, there has been a lot of progress. But the mind and intellect is what we have neglected. And unless you improve your inner equipment, there cannot be peace in the world, there cannot be joy in our life. There will be a lot of problems, a lot of sorrow. And what people do is they improve organizations. They say, we need to make a better organization. So capitalism is no good, so make communism. Somebody says communism is not good, build socialism. Socialism is not built good, have more business. So we try to improve organizations. And again, that is tinkering with the external. We are not improving the individual. The individual needs to be improved. And what is an individual? Just as there is a wall or a building. Now, a building is, suppose it's a brick building, brick wall. So building is as strong as all the bricks. If one brick in the middle is weak and it gives way, then the other bricks will give way and the building will collapse. So similarly, just as a building is as strong as the individual bricks, so society is as strong as the individual being. Just so each and every one of us is a part of this society. And if there is one disturbed individual or one disordered individual, he can create a lot of havoc. As we have seen, you know, some people get upset and, you know, they go to school. And in the olden days, if a kid was mad with another kid, he would punch him in the face. They would get into a fight, get some bruises, be taken to the principal's office and everything would be settled. And now if a kid is mad at another kid, what does he do? He goes home and brings his dad's machine gun and destroys the whole school. One disordered individual in Las Vegas killed hundreds of people. So why is that? Because we have neglected the inner growth of the individual, the mind and intellect. And the mind and intellect is what makes us, what makes our personality. See, the body, we pretty much have the same human body. Yeah, there are some subtle differences between different sexes and skin color and hair and all. But essentially, all of us have the same heart, the lungs, the liver, kidneys, brain. The consciousness or God within us is the same, even though we say, oh, my God is this and your God is that. But actually, there is only one God who takes different forms and has different names. That's what we believe. You can call him Allah, you can call him Father in Heaven, Guru, Krishna, Ram. But actually, there is only one, which is in every one of us. So that same God that is in me is in you. That is our understanding. So what distinguishes you and me from each other is the mind, my emotions, and intellect, my ideas, and vastness, my desires. So the mind, as I said, is the seat of emotions. The intellect is what decides. And what does religion do, or spirituality? We say that religions are many, but spirituality is one. Yes, there might be some differences in the way a Christian worships, or a Muslim, or a Hindu, but the essence of all the religions is the same, the Ten Commandments, or the concepts of Buddha, or the concepts of Guru Nanak. And as long as we follow religious principles, we emphasize that the intellect has to dominate over the mind, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But when your mind dominates, when you say you work on the emotional level or the instinct level, then we are like an animal. For example, a lion tomorrow onward, he's not going to say, I have been killing deers for so long, I'm such a brutal lion, from tomorrow I'm going to become vegetarian and I'm going to only eat plants and not kill any deer and be very gentle and loving. It's not going to happen, because that is his instinct. But when humans work at the instinct level and do not use their thinking capacity, which God gave us, the intellect, then we are functioning at the emotional level or at the instinct level. And that is the cause of all the conflicts, the cause of all the wars, the cause of all the problems. It's that we see the differences in each other. We do not see the common divinity. We do not see that we are all part of that one whole, but we start saying, I am separate from him, my religion is separate from his religion, my country from his country, my family from his family, all that. So what we have to do is learn to discriminate. Now, discriminate has many meanings. One is a discrimination against a certain community or certain race. But here, when we talk about discrimination, we are not talking about between races, but discrimination is understanding what is real and what is unreal, what is right and what is wrong, what I should do and what I should not do, what is honest, what is dishonest, what is moral, what is immoral. So that understanding, the ability to distinguish between these two pairs of opposites, is called discrimination, and that is based on right understanding of the intellect guided by scriptures. So the intellect, which is guided, and we believe that all scriptures tell us the same truth, whether you're reading the Bible or the Guru Granth Sahib or the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita or the Upanishads, the essence of all of them is the same. Why? Because the God that they lead us to is one. And the problem comes when we focus on the externalities of religion. This is the way to do it. That's what creates violence, because I want to convert another person, or I want to forcefully change him, or if he doesn't follow, I will kill him. So the problems occur because of the wrong understanding. Jesus never said that go out and, Muhammad, as far as I know, I don't know much Islam, but most of the founders did not preach violence. It is the wrong understanding of the scriptures, wrong understanding of the prophet that leads to violence. And so when we are working at the emotional level, then we say, I felt like doing it. I just feel like. So this feel like is the creates a lot of problems, a lot of difficulties, because I don't think what is right. I just felt like doing it. And so when I just feel like doing it and I do what I feel like, then I do not use my intelligence, and that creates a lot of problems, a lot of sorrow. Talking about sorrow, this professor was giving a talk at Oxford, and he's talking about how foods are bad for us. You know, he says meat, it is filled with steroids and antibiotics, and it is very unhealthy for you. Fish is filled with mercury, and Chinese food is filled with MSG, and then soda, you know, burns your stomach, and salads have bacteria in them, you know, so there's so many problems. But he says there is one food which causes lots of sorrow, lots of problems for years after it is consumed. So can somebody tell me what it is? What food is it that causes years of sorrow and problems? So one lady puts up her hand and says, wedding cake. Creates years of problems. So the problems we create in our life are based on wrong relationships, wrong ideas, wrong concepts. And what happens? We function at our level of our whims and fancies instead of logically. And that's why a person suddenly gets angry and, you know, does something. It can be at the individual level, it can be even at the national or international level. We can see now people are making nuclear weapons, and we don't know what's going to happen to North Korea, what's going to happen with Iran, what's going to happen with Middle East. We don't know when some crazy fellow will get mad and release a nuclear weapon. And when that happens, that will be the end of the world. So we do not know what is going to happen because there is no logic. And what is the connection between the mind and intellect? They say it's like a receptionist and a boss. Now, there is a receptionist in the office and she gets an important paper. What does she do? She doesn't decide. She submits it to the boss and says there is this important letter that came, a legal letter. And then the boss decides, okay, this is what we should do. This is how the office is run based on his thinking and his... But suppose the receptionist looks at the legal letter and says, this is garbage, just puts it away. And it's an important, you know, summons or an... What's going to happen? The boss is going to miss some important legal, you know, deadline, and then maybe end up with a lot of financial loss, even, you know, legal problems. So the job of the receptionist is to present everything to the boss. Similarly, the mind, which is the seat of emotions, receives all impulses from the body. I see, I hear, smell, taste, touch, all the senses. And then the mind presents to the intellect, okay, what should we do? Like there is a person coming at me with a gun. What should I do? There's another person coming at me with a book, flowers. What should I do? So accordingly, the intellect will decide based on what is right. There was a difference between a person coming at me with a gun and a person coming at me with flowers. So, but if the mind starts deciding on its own what it should do based on its whims and feel like, then that will be like the receptionist making her own decisions. And again, the mind is said to be a flow of thoughts, just as a river is a flow of water. And how is the river kept in check? By the two banks of the river. If the banks are sturdy, they maintain the flow of the river. But suppose the river starts overflowing or the banks become weak over the years, then the water will flow over the banks and maybe flood the city or the town. So similarly, the mind is a flow of thoughts, and the intellect or the capacity to decide keeps the mind in check in a particular direction. But if the mind is not controlled, And how do we do that? Through right understanding, through developing positive values and emotions, and through meditation, because meditation is a very powerful way to direct the mind away from the world of objects upward to God's presence within us. And I think most of you have watched the video. If you are here for the first time, I'll send it to you at the end of the class on meditation. So meditation is one of the best ways to direct the mind in the right direction and to quieten and calm the mind which is stressed or agitated. Through meditation can be calmed or quieted. Then they talk a lot about practicing virtue and practicing kindness. You know, they say, oh, you know, we should be very good, we should be very virtuous, we should be kind. And then people will come and give you lectures, you know, 7 ways of doing this and 5 ways of doing that. And you say, yeah, yeah, you go to a lecture or a talk and you're very impressed. Yes, yes, that's how I should do, that's how I should change. But that is only external. And then you say, from tomorrow I will be more kind, I will be more virtuous, I will be more loving, I will be more compassionate. Good, nothing wrong with that, but that is only an external change. Inside, I am still filled with anger and hostility and greed and jealousy and conflicts. So outwardly it seems like, oh, this person has changed, and he's, but it is only an outer. It is like a house which is very dirty inside. Outside you decorate it and paint it and it looks very nice. Aha, it's a beautiful building. And inside you go, it's filled with dirt and old, the walls are. So similarly, we outwardly change, but inside we still remain the same. So what we have to do is not practice virtue and kindness, but develop kindness within, where I become kindness, I become virtuous. It is no longer a practice, but it is a change in the individual's state of mind, where the person is not practicing because somebody told him, or because it's written in the Bible, or because the prophet said it, or somebody said it. That is good, but he or she changes from within. And there has to be a fundamental change in the individual's thinking. It should not be just, it's like a gift wrap. You know, you wrap something very good, but inside the gift is, you know, totally something useless. The gift wrapping is very good, but what is more important is what is in the box, not what is gift wrapped. So similarly for you and me, it is more important to change fundamentally within, and not make a show that I have changed, you know, I am such a kind person, I am such a loving. But unless the fundamental values change, and how do we do that? By going to the cause. What is the cause of my problems? What is the cause of my suffering? Why am I behaving this way? Why am I not more kind? Why am I not more loving? Why am I not more compassionate? Why am I not able to quieten my mind? Why is my mind so agitated? Why is my mind so disturbed? The reason the mind is disturbed, for 2 reasons. One is, it is not under the control of the intellect. Secondly, the mind is not connected with God. If your mind is connected with God, and that's what we recommend, that throughout the day, remind yourself that there is God within me, there is divinity within me, and connect your mind with the inner God. Just even for a few seconds, if you have a 30-second break or a minute break or 10 minutes break at work or somewhere, just close your eyes and sit in one corner and just to take a few deep breaths and connect with the divinity within. And when you do that, when you take few deep breaths and connect with God's presence, God is in every one of us. There is nobody, even the worst sinner has God in him. Even the greatest saint has God in him. The God is the same. It's not that God is more in Jesus and less in Hitler. God is the same. It is how we use the divinity, the power within us, that can make you into Jesus or can make you into Hitler. It can make you into a loving monk or make you into a child molester. So it is the power that God has given us that we can, depending on how we use it, makes us good or bad. And the change in us should not be temporary. It should not be a temporary, and it will be temporary if I'm not fully convinced of this path, that this is what I should do, this is what I should. And a temporary change is okay, it's good, but it's like a rubber ball. You know, you squeeze it. After a while, it will release. If it's under the water, you keep pushing. So there's only so much you can squeeze, and then the ball jumps up. So similarly, the mind, there is only so much you can squeeze it, suppress it. I should not do bad things. I should be good. But you do not suppress your thoughts. You sublimate them. So the thoughts which are selfish, which are angry, which are arrogant, you direct them to God. And as you direct your mind closer to God, you will find that the same negative qualities will become positive qualities. You will develop more love, more compassion, and ignorance will be removed. Because what the reason for all our problems is ignorance. Because we have not truly understood the teachings of religion, the teachings of the prophets, and the sayings of the prophets. So instead of forcing the mind to sit still, start thinking about God and direct your mind towards God. And the more you come closer to God within, the closer you will come to everybody, because then you will see that my God is there in everybody. So there is only one God, whether it's a tree or whether it's a cat or a dog or a fish or a bird or a human being, there is only one. And so this change has to be gradual. It cannot be by force. You cannot say, from tomorrow onwards. No, it is a gradual process, because it took us years, and we believe many lifetimes, if you believe in rebirth, to develop these vasanas, these negative tendencies. So it's not going to happen overnight, but the idea is not to be discouraged, but to realize that what is my goal in life? I should reach God and I should serve the world. And once I realize that is my goal, then I direct all my actions in that direction towards serving God, my mind towards loving God, and my intellect towards knowing God. And once those three things are directed towards God, then you don't need to force such an individual. It's like a child. In the beginning, you have to forcibly take him to church. You know, oh, come on, Sunday morning, you have to go. But after a while, when the person grows up and realizes that what is the benefit of going to church or going to the temple or going on this spiritual path, it's the same like, you know, studying. When a child is small, you have to force him to study. But once he goes to high school or college, and then he himself realizes or herself realizes that if I study well, I'll get good grades. If I get good grades, I'll go to a good college. So everything is improved if the person is convinced. So similarly, on the spiritual path, we have to be convinced through reading these books and associating with saints and good teachers. So when we do that, then and then alone, our life will improve. So the mind is the man. As the mind, so the man. So that is the essence of this talk today. Are there any questions or comments?
Which does pratyahara play a role in what you're talking about right there? Controlling the senses as the perceiver, and how you react to, like what's off that list.
Right.
The mind reacts to what it perceives. And how much is contemplation? Of God or Swami Chinmaya, does contemplation play a balanced role in prayer and mantra and meditation?
Yeah, I think these are good questions. Pratyahara is withdrawal of the mind. So the mind modern science says that I see the object, it goes through my pupil into my retina, and then from the retina it goes to the mind, and that's how I can see a chair or a picture or a light. But what Vedanta says that it's the mind that goes out. Through the eyes, it perceives the objects. Through the ears, it listens to the sounds. Through the nose, the smell. Through the tongue, the taste. Through the skin, the touch. And it's the mind that goes outward. It's not the thought. The perceptions do not come in. It is the mind that goes out. That's why I'm busy thinking about something. I'm very engrossed. There's some problem at work. And my friend walks by and he says hi and smiles. And I don't even acknowledge him. And then later on he'll say, you know what? You're so rude. I passed by and I said hi. He said, no, I'm sorry. I didn't see you. So my mind, even though my eyes were seeing my friend, my mind was somewhere else. So pratyahar, what happens is that the mind which is running out into the world of objects, it gets tired, the mind, because it loses all its energy in chasing after the worldly objects. I want this, I want to see this, I want to hear this, I want to possess. So as you practice withdrawal or pratyahar, where you no longer, the mind is not running out into the world of objects, trying to acquire and possess, then that mind gets a lot of in energy. See, we have a lot of mental energy within us, and that energy we dissipate in trying to possess, acquire. I want more than this. I want to fight. I want to compete. I want to cheat others. I want to lie. So the mind is involved. So that mind, when it is not running out in pratyahar, in control, then that mind has a lot of energy built up. Now that energy, what do I do with that energy? And that is very important. If we don't, then this mind, the energy dam will burst and this person will go out and do something crazy. But if that energy is directed into two fields, one is service. So start with that extra energy serving the world. You know, I go out and build a house for the homeless, you know, Habitat for Humanity, or I go and serve in a food kitchen, you know, or things like that. The second thing that we do with the mind is contemplation. Through right understanding, contemplation leads to meditation. And that mind, which is full of energy, that energy is directed inward to know God or to realize God. And I do that through studying the scriptures, through reading about meditation, through practicing meditation, and ultimately. So, yes, it's a very good question. So, contemplation and meditation are the way of directing that mind's energy inward, which otherwise would be used just in running. Oh, I just want to go to the shopping mall. I have nothing to do. Let me go to the mall. And then I go there and I unnecessarily buy things I didn't need. Why? Because I was just there. So that energy and that time which we waste outside is waste in inner growth. And that is contemplation. And so this mental energy being consumed is wasted. When it is conserved, that is pratyahar. It's a very good question. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good answer.
So that's a Sanskrit word. Pratyahar is a Sanskrit word.
So my mind, you know, it might take me places as I, you know, I'm being redundant by saying, but what if I have these tendencies from, you know, from who knows, whoever believes in reincarnation. I mean, I sometimes have no cognition that this is a tendency that I have. So I'm a little bit of ignorant about it. So I guess, you know, I've just been wondering if somehow, you know, after so many years living on this planet, that realization come automatically to me, or if the tragic event will make me realize, wait a minute, I better clean up my... So I guess, you know, I've been pondering this question, but I guess, you know, if you probably provide some insight as to why is it that mind is just so troubled like that.
That's a very good question. Needs a lot of thinking. So first of all, practicing, as we said, you first practice and decide I'm going to do it, but ultimately you should be convinced of that. You should not just externally practice. Now you're, so that, you know, that one should change one's behavior and ultimately change one's emotions, one's thoughts, and even one's desires. So everything should be divinized. My life should become a divine existence instead of just a worldly existence. The second part, whether I should change myself or a traumatic event will change or God will come and change me. They say that we all have to change, all have to direct our mind towards God. Now, do you do it lovingly or do you do it with stress? See, initially, God will come to you in the form of a teacher to give you knowledge. And that is a gentle way of learning. You know, you have this book, you have this knowledge in the form of a teacher or that. So it says you learn. And some people learn, other people don't. They say, I don't need all this spirituality and religion and meditation. I'm just going to have fun, enjoy life and eat, drink and be merry. So then that same universe, the same consciousness will teach you through pain. See, it's not that God is willing pain on you, but because of your wrong actions, you invite pain upon yourself. And then when there is pain and there is suffering, and they say, why am I suffering and why am I having problems? It is because of the universe is trying to wake you up, trying to wake me up to that higher truth. So either you wake up gently with knowledge, or you wake up with pain. The choice is yours. So the better is that direct your mind with the right understanding in the right direction rather than wait for some calamity to befall me or some tragedy. And the calamity or tragedy is not caused by God or caused by the universe. It's caused by my own wrong actions. So one has to understand that. So my suggestion would be do it gently. Do not wait for a tragedy or a calamity because that will wake you up. See, when a big tragedy comes, you say, why it has happened? And then that will, then a lot of people turn to God at that time. Some of them turn away from God. Oh God, you are so bad and you punished me. But others say, you know, this tragedy, there has to be a reason. So when a tragedy comes, look at it as a learning experience that even though this problem has come in my life, it has come to teach me a lesson. Nothing comes without a reason. So even if problems come, they are coming to wake me up, to teach me a lesson. So when there is a bad situation in your life, instead of crying or complaining about it, look at it as an opportunity to grow, to improve, to become a better individual. And so Eckhart Tolle, if you have read his book, The Power of Now, he calls them alarm clocks. That life will give us alarm clocks. If the first time you don't wake up, then second time alarm clock will be louder, and third time louder, and fourth time it will be deafening, the sound. So it's better to wake up with the first gentle alarm rather than wait for a tragedy. So I hope it answers your question. But that's a very good comment. Thank you. Yes.
I don't remember but I've been told that there are 5 states of mind. I don't remember the names, but when you were talking and asking that question about practice, kindness, and virtue, and then you went into the state of mind, to me, when you wake up in the morning, the mind, the body, you know, you wake up and you get out of bed, you need to ask yourself in relationship to God where your mind's at.
Right. Actually, we said there are 4 states of the mind. The waking, dream, and deep sleep, those are the 3 states we go through. And the 4th is the state of the realized master, who is established in the truth, called realization, which in Sanskrit we call the Turiya state. So the state of evolution where you have no longer, the world is no longer important, but you have become one with God. And that's when Jesus could say, he who has seen me has seen the Father. So the Father in heaven and I are one. And same thing, Swami Chinmayananda and Shankaracharya and all say that there is one reality and all of us are that manifestation of that. We are not separate from that divinity. So that is the fourth state of the mind, which is the state of realization or state of evolution. Unless you might have heard of some other description, but that is what I know.
I think it was four. That's probably wrong.
Thank you. Yeah. So the fourth state is the state of evolution, of realization, of becoming one with God. But we just go through the three states: deep sleep, dream, waking. Waking, dream, deep sleep. We are not at that level where what Jesus was, or Guru Nanak was, or Swami Chinmayananda was, or Shankaracharya was. They were at a different level of evolution, called the fourth state, the Turiya state.
Okay.